Welcome to our second weekend of Core Online. If you're here checking us out for the very first time, I want to take a second to introduce myself. My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at Core. And whether today is your very first time here or you've been around Core 100 times and you consider this place to be home, we want you to know just how incredibly excited we are that you are here with us, maybe in a little bit different of a way, as we embark on this brand new series that we are calling Bystander. And over the course of the next couple of weeks, this series is really going to focus in on this one reality, this one struggle. Can I really believe in Jesus? And as I give you that incredibly vague description of what the next several weeks in this series is going to be about, what I acknowledge is that for many of us, there are these two questions that come to mind automatically. The first is this: Ben, a series about can we really believe in Jesus? Isn't that kind of what every single series in a church is about? And to a certain degree, that question is valid because, yes, there's an element of that in every series that we do around here. But this series is different in this way. This series is going to focus on the evidence. This is going to take us deeper. This series is going to focus on the proof of how can we really, beyond a shadow of a doubt, buy into this thing called Christianity, buy into this guy named Jesus, and that he is who he says he was, and that he actually did what he said he did. Because here's the reality. As we head towards Easter, it's a perfect series for us to embark on. Because if we can't really buy into this guy who died on a cross and rose from the dead, then what's the point of Easter at all? And I know what you're thinking, chocolate bunnies and peeps, right? But doesn't there have to be something so much better to Easter than just that? And so we felt like this was a perfect time for us to take a deeper dive into, can we really believe in this man? But there's a second question that comes to many of our minds when we talk about a series that focuses in on believing in this guy named Jesus. And that question is this: man, how can I really believe in him with all that I've been through? Ben, if you saw my past and the struggles I've walked through and the circumstances that have happened along the way and the things that undoubtedly I would have to admit just seem so stinking unfair, how is it possible for me to believe in a guy who has allowed me to go through that in my past, or who's allowing me to go through what I'm walking through right now in my present? Or maybe you're saying, Ben, you don't even have to look at my life. Just look at what's going on in the world around us. Look at the injustice. Look at the chaos. Look at everything that seems to be crumbling around us. And how in the midst of that can we possibly believe in a guy who you're going to tell us is in our corner, who's fighting for us, who wants the best for us? And you see, what I believe with all of my heart is this: in the midst of whatever you're going through, in the midst of what we're walking through as the world right now, that this is a perfect time for us to really acknowledge that tension, for us as Core Community Church to make this statement that we understand the doubt that you're walking through, that we understand the questions that every single one of us have when it comes to this guy named Jesus. That we understand that it's not always easy to believe, but here at Core, we aren't afraid of meeting those doubts and those questions head on, to address those things and to say beyond a shadow of a doubt, while those questions are valid and those questions are great ones, and if we were walking through the things that you have walked through, we would undoubtedly have those same questions and those same doubts. What we believe with all of our hearts is this: is that there are incredible answers to those questions. Is that the God we have provides a solution, an answer to the things that you've walked through in your past or in your present, the things we're walking through presently in our world, that our God provides evidence that his son was who he says he was, has done what he says he did, and will continue to do what he promises to do. But how do we find that evidence? And you see, my answer to that question is simply this. I believe with all of my heart that we find belief in Jesus Christ, that we find evidence for Jesus Christ in the same way we do it in our everyday real world situations. You see, tomorrow morning, every single Monday, when we head out into our real world and we face the same challenges again and again and again, we find our way to believing in something in one of two factors. The first is this. We believe first based upon evidence, right? That we want proof, we want facts that back it up, that allow us to have confidence in it. But secondly, we find belief in things based upon confidence in the person passing along the information. That we believe and trust wholeheartedly in the person who's telling us that these things actually happened. You see, for every single one of us, we have two different kinds of people in our lives. For every single one of us, we've experienced this one kind of person in our life time and time again. And that is the person who takes every story and turns it into a fish story. You all have that person. There's that one person that came to mind as soon as I said that. That person who takes the story, who takes the truth, and they have a tendency to constantly embellish, to constantly stretch the truth a little bit. And you look at them in those moments where it's running off the rails and the story and the fish has become gigantic, and you say, "Did you really see this?" And they look back at you and they say, "Well, I didn't see it, but I heard it from my uncle's cousin's sister's brother's friend's daughter." And what we know is that we've experienced those stories and that embellishment so often that we don't know if we can really trust the source anymore. But we all have a second type of person in our life as well. We all have the person in our life who, when they tell us something, we know that they've experienced it. We know that they've done their research. We know that they've studied it. We know that they're an expert in that particular field. And so we trust what they say without having to go to the next layer of saying, "Really? Is that really how it went?" For example, I know for many of us, when we were growing up and going through school, think back to the moments in your life where you were learning arithmetic. And your teacher stepped in front of you, in front of the chalkboard or the whiteboard, dependent upon how much life experience you have. And your teacher told you that 10 times 10 equals 100. Now, what I'm willing to bet is this. Is that night when your teacher told you that, you did not go home, grab your Legos out of your toy box, lay them on the ground in a fashion in which you had 10 rows of 10, count them up to make sure that it equaled 100. We just trusted that our teacher knew what they were talking about. We considered the source and we knew that the source was trustworthy. Heck, I'm married to a teacher. I know that they are a trustworthy source. Well, my brother's also a teacher, so maybe about 50-50, you got me there. But in our lives, we all have these two kinds of people. These people who have told the fish story that we're not sure that we can trust, but there are also these people that we lean into, that we consider the source, that we have confidence that what they're telling us is true. But here's the problem. The problem is that when we go to find belief in this thing called Christianity, this guy named Jesus, somewhere along the way, we've been led to believe that when it comes to our belief in Christianity and this guy named Jesus, that our religious belief is somehow separated from reasoning and fact and evidence and proof. Because somewhere along the way, we've heard someone say this line to us. You just gotta believe. When it comes to Christianity, when it comes to faith, you just gotta believe. And if you grew up in the South, they maybe said it like this. You just gotta believe, brother. Or maybe if you grew up in the Sunday school class that I did, the little old lady said, you just gotta have faith, honey. I really hope in this moment that that was so long ago that I was in Sunday school that my Sunday school teachers don't have the technological capabilities to be checking out this message. But all of us have walked through moments of our lives where we've been led to believe that our religious faith, that our faith and belief in this guy named Jesus was just completely based upon you just gotta believe or you just gotta have faith. And evidence and proof never factored into the equation. But what I believe with all of my heart, and you got to hang on to this, you got to hear this if you hear nothing else, is that when it comes to our faith in this guy named Jesus, if we were to encounter Jesus right here, right now, today, what I believe with all of my heart is this, is that Jesus would look at us with our attachment to those lines of you just got to believe or you just got to have faith, and he would say, really? Where did you get that idea? Where did you get that idea that there wasn't any evidence, that there wasn't any proof that I was who I said I was and that I did what I said I did? Because what you're missing in this entire equation is this, is that there were men who wrote about what I did, not from a place of they heard it from an uncle's, brother's, sister's, cousin's, friend's, daughter. They wrote it from a place of they actually experienced what I did. They lived it. They walked beside me as these things happened in my life, as I performed these things day after day after day. Go talk to John. Go talk to Matthew. Go talk to Mark. Go talk to Luke. Go talk to Paul. These were guys who were bystanders to what I did when I walked here on this earth. And as they experienced what I did, they wrote it down to pass it on to you. They wrote it down so that you could know these things were true beyond a shadow of a doubt. And so over the course of the next couple of weeks, we're going to latch on to this one guy named John, who spent 3 years with this man named Jesus. And all along the way, he saw the miracles that Jesus did. He saw the way in which Jesus treated the outcast and the sinners and the people in this world who no one else wanted to associate with. He experienced that time and time again. And because of the way in which it changed his life and changed his perspective on this world, he said, I got to write this down. I got to write this down so that this life change, so that the way in which Jesus can change this world doesn't stop with me, but so that the people who come thousands of years later, those of us sitting in our living rooms in 2020, can begin to experience and buy into this man who has the ability to change our lives, who has the ability to change our world. And what I need you to understand is this. This is what John does so incredibly. He says, I want you to buy into so badly who this guy named Jesus was, and that there's evidence and proof, and that there's trusted sources that back up that he was here and he did what he said he did. That I'm not just going to tell you what happened, but I also need you to understand why it happened. And John, in his writing, does such an incredible job of bookending his writings with those two thoughts. First, I want you to know what happened, and then I want to fully explain to you why it happened and why it was so important that I document this for you as a bystander to all Jesus Christ did here on this earth, but also what he's still doing in your life right here, right now, today. If you haven't done so already, this is an incredible time for you to grab your weekly. For many of you, we sent this to you in the mail, and hopefully you've got your notes page there in front of you. For those of you who don't, everything's going to slide across the screen so you can follow along with us. But I want to show you those bookends to John's writing as a bystander to everything that Jesus Christ did when he was here on this earth. This morning, we're going to jump in first to the very beginning. We're going to jump in to John chapter 1, verse 14. And here he's really giving this explanation in these first couple of verses of here is exactly what I saw happening. Here is what happened as I journeyed with Jesus and what became real to me. Check this out. He says this in John chapter 1, verse 14. So the word, this is God, became human and he made his home among us. What I saw happening was this. I saw God put on flesh and he made his home among us here on earth. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. In every interaction he had with people that I witnessed, all I saw was unfailing love and faithfulness every step of the way. And we, he's saying we as in me and those who traveled with him, me and the rest of his disciples, me and the rest of the witnesses, we have seen his glory. The glory of the Father's one and only Son. And so John starts with this. I want you to understand first and foremost what I saw happening. Here is the Son of God who came to earth, put on flesh, made his home among us, and showed us what it was like to love this world in an unfailing fashion. But I also want you to understand the why. That as I saw that play out in front of me day after day, year after year, this is why this is so important. This is why this holds weight for you right here, right now in 2020. At the very end, like I said, he bookends his writing so incredibly well with these two things. At the very end, as we fast forward to some of his very last sentences in John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31, he finishes in this way. The disciples saw Jesus do many other miraculous signs in addition to the ones recorded in this book. And so he starts his parting shots by saying this, I wrote as much as I could. I gave you a ton of stories, but what you need to know is that all of this evidence, all of this proof, it barely even scratches the surface from what we saw this guy named Jesus do. And then he continues this way. But these are written. I wrote this so that you may continue to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and don't miss this, and that by believing in him, you will have life by the power of his name. You see, when we look close enough, that's one of the most incredible parting shots in all of history. What John is laying on the table is this. Is that I saw this man named Jesus do all of these things that changed my life, that can change your life, that changed this world. And I'm writing these things so that you can believe in that. But I want you to know something greater. I want you to know something far more significant, and that is this, that when you choose to believe in him, there is a result attached to believing in Christ. There is a result that comes in our life from believing in Jesus Christ, that there are benefits that come from that, that our life changes in a possible positive way. What did he say there to finish? That you may have life by the power of his name, that you may have life and have it to the full, that you may have a rich and satisfying life. These are all words that John used over and over and over again. I'm writing this because I have experienced the result in my life by believing in this guy named Jesus. And I believed in him. I followed him, not based on the sentence, the line, you just got to believe, you just got to have faith. My belief in him wasn't based upon faith alone. My belief in him was based upon what I saw happen. And when I saw it happen before me, the result was it changed my life and it changed the way in which I made a difference in the world around me. It changed the way in which I brought hope into a hurting world. That as everything felt like it was crumbling around us as Jews at the hands of the Roman government, that as the world felt like it was falling apart, that as we were sitting in silence from our God for over 400 years, as I saw this man operate, the results that happened in my life was that it caused me to be something different in my world. And I don't want you to miss those results. You see, every single week, throughout this series, we're going to dive into a different story that John brings to the table. And not only is it going to give us a perspective on who Jesus was and give us an ability to believe in the evidence, the proof, the facts, But it's also going to do this second incredible thing. It's also going to speak truth into our lives and give purpose to what we are walking through right now. The circumstances in our life, the circumstances in our world. In this series, every single week, as we break down one of these stories that John brings us, it's going to feel ridiculously different from the series that we just came out of. But here's what I promise you. This series and each of these stories, it's going to be incredibly fun. It's going to give us a deeper look, and we're going to spend a little bit more time breaking down each element of these stories. And for every single one of us, we probably fall into two camps. Maybe you're sitting there and you find yourself skeptical, or you find yourself just barely, your faith just barely hanging on by a thread, because your faith has always just been based on that, faith alone. And you just got to believe, brother. You just got to have faith, sweetie. But you don't know in the midst of the circumstances you're walking through, if one more storm comes your way, if you can continue to believe in this guy named Jesus. And this series is going to give us something incredible to latch onto if you find yourself in that camp. But there's also some of us who find ourselves in another camp. We believe in Jesus Christ, and we have that faith, we have that relationship, we have the proof and the evidence that we need to believe in him. But this series is going to be so fun because it's going to reveal some things to us that maybe we have never seen, that maybe we have never heard, and stories that we have heard. It's going to dig deeper into some things that can change our lives and the way in which we operate in this world, right here, right now, today, even if we find our relationship with Jesus Christ in a really great place. And so let's dive in this morning. This morning we're going to start in one of these very first stories from John. It comes from John chapter 2. And it's a story that maybe for many of us who have grown up in the church, we've heard this story before. It's the story of Jesus changing the water into wine. But there are some really incredible things, and I'm going to help us along as we go kind of uncover these incredible things for every single one of us. Here's how the story starts, starting in verse 1. It says this. On the third day, a wedding took place at Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. And so the backdrop to this story, the context of this story is somewhat obvious, right? We have a wedding taking place. But what you may not know about ancient Jewish, first century Jewish weddings is that they were an incredibly elaborate celebration. And some of you fathers of brides out there are saying, I don't know how it could get much more elaborate. I just dropped $10,000 on my daughter's wedding. Can it get more elaborate than that? It can. You see, in first century Jewish culture, the wedding celebration would sometimes last days, even up to a week long of partying. It was this incredibly big celebration that Jesus and his disciples had been invited to. But we also see that Jesus' mother was there. And what we can glean from future text is that Jesus' mother was, for lack of a better term, she was part of the catering crew. She was part of the serving crew for this wedding. And so that's what's taking place at the beginning of this story. Here's how it continues. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." In this moment, kind of the centerpiece of the celebration was the wine. But they had run out of the wine, and as a part of the serving crew, as a part of the catering company, Mary knows that they've run out of wine, and so she comes to Jesus. And where my mind goes so often, your mind probably doesn't go here, but I immediately thought about this. We have a crisis situation where they have run out of something, and for some reason, Mary knows immediately that she can go to her son Jesus, and he can fix the problem. How did she know that? And my mind immediately just goes back to, like, I wonder what Jesus' childhood was like. Like, there must have been occurrence after occurrence where Mary walked over to the fridge and she was like, "We're out of butter." And instead of sending her sons to the store, she just walked over to Jesus and was like, "Hey, Jesus, we're out of butter. I'm in the middle of cooking this. Could you just do what you do? I won't even look. I'll turn my back. But you just do what you do and make sure there's butter back in there so I can get back to what I'm doing." And I just imagine that Mary had experienced that Jesus could be the solution in these crisis situations. And And so she goes to him and she says, "Son, we are all out of wine. Can you do your thing?" And as she presents this to Jesus, he responds in this way. "Woman," now I have to stop and apologize to many of you that the Bible doesn't come with any warnings of don't try this at home. Like, do not respond to your mother or your spouse by starting in that way. "Woman," because even if you say, "I'm just quoting Jesus," it's not going to get you out of the doghouse any quicker. But he begins in that way, "Woman." And when we really look at the Greek and we really see that translation, the way in which Jesus was really referring to his mother was in a formal sense of saying, "My lady. My lady, why do you involve me?" Some translations say, "This is none of my concern." Jesus replied, "My hour has not come." It was like he was looking at his mother and saying, "Mom, we've had conversations about this before. Don't you realize that my purpose for coming to earth was to be the savior of the world, not the savior of weddings?" But as he said that, his mother does this. His mother immediately said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." It's like his mother makes this request to him, and before even really waiting for the answer, she just turns around, looks at the servants and said, "Just do whatever he needs you to do. Mommy told him to do it. Mama says, so why don't you just go ahead and just wait for him to tell you what he's about to do, because I know that Jesus is going to come through on this one." And when I thought about that, it brought me back to this time about a year and a half ago. My mom, she's in this ladies group called Mother's Club, and they've met together for as long as I can remember. They've probably been meeting together every single month for at least the last 30 years. And the group has evolved in such a way that now they're to a point, maybe they've exasperated every other creative idea. Now they're to a point where every month a different lady in the group has to create a program, has to come up with someone that will come and present to them. And so about a year and a half ago, when it was my mother's turn to come up with a program, she came to me and she said, "Ben, I don't have any better ideas." That's always the way you like to lead off with an ask. "I don't have any better ideas. Would you come and would you speak to our group? And you can speak about whatever you want to. Would you give a presentation to our group?" And immediately what ran through my mind as my mother asked me that was this: "Mom, you know how much I hate talking in front of people. I have to do it multiple times a week, and I don't really like that. It makes me incredibly nervous. And what I also know is this: it's not going to be any more fun speaking in front of a group of critical 70-something-year-old women." Again, I have to say this twice within a message. I hope all of my mom's friends are not technologically sound enough to be checking out this message. But everything that ran through my mind was, "Mom, you know, I don't really do that. I don't really want to do that." But you know what my real response was? "Sure, I'll do it for you." We all have that one person in our life, right? Maybe for you, it's a mother-in-law or a father-in-law. That every time they ask you to do something, even though everything inside of you is screaming, "You shouldn't do this, you don't have to do this," you know, you just have to say yes. You just have to do it. Because when it comes to your in-laws, it's not just that you're going to be in trouble with them, it's also that you're going to be in trouble with your spouse. And so you say yes to them in much the same way that Jesus was backed into a corner somewhat by his mother. And even though he says, "Why do you involve me? My hour has not come. This isn't what I'm supposed to be doing," he knows he just has to go through and do it anyways. And this is where the text begins to shift, and this is where it gets so good. It's somewhat funny up until this point, but things shift on a dime starting here. "Nearby stood 6 stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. And you're saying, "Ben, that seems like meaningless details. What do you mean it gets good here?" Now, what we don't see in this text is when it highlights these 6 giant stone jars that are used for ceremonial washing, what it's referring to is this. It's referring to this original covenant that God laid down between him and his people, between him and the Israelites, between him and all of the Jews. And this original covenant had details in it on how you present presented yourself as clean before God. And there was this ceremonial washing that needed to happen. And there were all of these instructions that at some points you needed to wash your hands. At some points you needed to wash all the way up to your elbows. And so these six jars were a constant part of Jewish society. There would be something along these lines, maybe not as elaborate as this rich, wealthy family had at their giant wedding celebration. But in each home, there would be some sort of washing jars that would be an icon of their covenant between them and God, of their relationship with God. And here is why it turns on a dime. This passage, this story, this moment in history that happened in Jesus' life that John is detailing, it shifts the focus onto this old covenant that God had given his people. And he said, I want you to focus on this thing that was old. And these jars are undoubtedly empty. Everything has run out of this. Now hang on to that as the story continues. Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet. Take it to the head caterer. Take it to the head servant. They did so. And the master of the banquet tasted the water. Oh no. They're going to bring him this water and it's just going to be water. And he's going to be even more furious that they've run out of wine. But they take him this water and what he realizes is the water had been turned into wine. He did not realize where it had come from. Though the servants who had drawn the water, they knew. They knew that Jesus had done something in the moment. And so because he did not know where it came from, he does this. He called the bridegroom aside and he said, everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine after the guests have had too much to drink. Here he pulls the bridegroom aside and he says, I know this is your first time doing this, and so maybe you don't understand how this all works, but in all the weddings that I've done, here's how it typically plays out. You bring out the really good wine first when the people can actually taste how good the wine is. And then once they're drunk, once they've had too much to drink, they don't really care what comes out, and so then you bring out the cheaper wine second. That's typically how it goes. But that's not how it went this time. But you have saved the best till now. And in this moment, everything shifts on a dime. You see, maybe you've heard this very story in your church 100 times, but you've missed time and time again the foreshadowing in this moment. And in this moment, when the master of ceremonies says, but you have saved the best till now. He wasn't just talking about the wine. He was also foreshadowing what God was about to do in our world. That while the original covenant was good between him and his people, he was about to bring something new and better to the table. That what was old might have been good in the time that it was given, but something new, someone new, was stepping onto the scene to replace that in every single one of our lives. That the best was about to come because this man named Jesus had walked on to the scene. And it finishes like this. What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory. And because of what he did, check this out, and because of what they saw, his disciples believed in him. In that very last verse there, from this very first story in John, we see this incredible hidden symbolism. That as we move through these stories that John is going to show us about who Jesus is, he never uses the word miracle. He always intentionally uses the word signs. And this is why. Because this was more than a miracle. This wasn't just a miracle. It was a sign that pointed to Jesus bringing something new and better. Something new and better to the world, something new and better to his people 2,000 years ago, yes. But also his ability to bring something new and better into your life and into my life right here, right now, today. And I think why this story is so huge and so relevant in our lives, where we sit, in the midst of the circumstances that we're walking through, is this. It's because what we see taking place in this story is that the miracle could not come to fruition without first the jars running dry. And for so many of us, we're walking through a season in our life where it feels like the jars are running dry, where it feels like our marriages are falling apart, where it feels like our kids are making all of the decisions we tried to lead them not to make, where it feels like our finances are falling by the wayside, where it feels like everything in our world is crumbling around us. We would look at our lives, and if we were to symbolically talk about them, we would say it feels like the wine has run out. But what's so incredible is this, is that sometimes it requires the wine running low for us to recognize the new and better that God can bring to the table in our lives. For us to recognize that when we invite Jesus to be a part of the equation of our lives, he is capable of bringing something new and better to the table, something new and better to our marriages, something new and better to our parenting, something new and better to our finances, something new and better to our perspective as we look out into this world, something new and better as we relate to our neighbors, as we bring hope into our world, that God is capable of bringing something new and better, no matter how much the wine has run out in your life. That is who he is. And it wasn't just a one-time miracle. It was a sign that pointed to the impact he wanted to have in your life and in my life. The impact he wanted to have in our world. And I think sometimes we get so stuck on this, I gotta see it to believe it, that what we miss is that our faith isn't always about seeing first. That oftentimes our faith can become strongest when we hear first from a bystander who has seen it, who has experienced it. When we look back at the stories of Matthew and Mark and Luke and John and Paul, and we see again and again and again the way in which this guy named Jesus responded to the heartache and the hardship that people were walking through. When we see it happen in the lives of our friends and our colleagues and our coworkers and our neighbors, and we hear their stories of how God is faithful, sometimes our faith is strongest and recognized most when we hear first and then see second. You see, that's what it looked like for John. He said, I just didn't follow on faith. I saw all of these things happen, and I had to pass it on to you so that your faith in this guy named Jesus could grow stronger because of what you heard me say. Because I am a trusted bystander in all of this. And I walked through every moment of this. And because of that, there's this one line that has reverberated throughout history, that has reverberated over the course of the last 2,000 years, that John said, because of what I saw, I would be remiss if I didn't pass this along to you as well, for you to understand what this guy named Jesus, this Messiah, this Savior of the world, was really all about when he wrote this in chapter 3, verse 16. For this is how God loved the world. He gave his one and only Son so that everyone, and you can just imagine first century Jews being like, put on the brakes, John. What do you mean by everyone? You mean everyone like the group of disciples who are around him? You mean everyone like as in all of the Jews, all of God's chosen. That's the everyone you're referring to. No, that's not what I wrote. He gave his one and only son so that everyone throughout all of history, everyone who chooses to believe in him will not perish but have eternal life. I sent my son so that your life could be different. So that when you hear the stories of the bystanders and you choose to believe, you can have confidence that not only will your life change in the present, but it has the ability to change your life for all of eternity. John was saying, I was just a simple fisherman. I was just a bystander to all of this, but it changed my life and my perspective so deeply, I had to write it down. And I wrote it down for this purpose. When we go back to one of those very first passages that we read in John chapter 20, these are written so that you may continue to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you will have life by the power of his name. John, as a bystander, was looking at you and looking at me, and he was expressing this one thing. I desperately want you to have that kind of life. I desperately want you to have the best of. And even though your circumstances that you've walked through, you're presently walking through, the things of this world don't seem to be at their greatest form, what you need to understand is that when Christ becomes a part of your life, a part of your circumstances, that he is capable of bringing about new and better. It may not happen in the timing that you want it to happen. It may not happen always in the way in which you want it to happen. But what I know is this, is when you choose to believe in him and bring him into your life, the new and better comes, and you are capable of seeing it for what it is. That you are capable of seeing that God is fighting for you, that he wants the best for you, and that this new and better, in whatever form or shape it takes, is capable of changing your life. There is a result for believing in this guy named Jesus. Are you willing to listen to the bystander and have confidence in the stories that Jesus is who he says he was and that he did everything he's promised to do? Will you pray with me? Father, this morning we thank you for what a great God you are. God, so often in the circumstances of our life, in the circumstances of the world around us, as we're going crazy from being confined to our houses and being in quarantine, it's really easy to focus our eyes on our circumstances and take our eyes off of how great of a God you are and how much you love us. So God, on this day, I don't want to brush past that fact that you sent your son to this earth because you loved us so deeply. Even though you knew the worst about us, you still choose to love us most. God, that's unfathomable that you would love me in that fashion. But God, I am so incredibly thankful that you do. God, in the midst of my doubts and my questions, I pray that you give me the courage to go back to these stories of the men who actually saw it, who actually lived it, who said, my faith wasn't just based on faith. My belief in this guy named Jesus wasn't in faith alone. It was because of what I saw that I gave my life to him, that I trusted in him, because of the signs, because of the proof, because of the evidence. And I wanted to pass those things on to you so that you could latch on to those things as well in your seasons of greatest doubt, in your greatest struggles, in your greatest hardship. And so God, if that's what our life looks like right here, right now, today, I pray that you give us the courage, give us the confidence, give us the reminders that we need to go back and to latch on to these stories of men like John who are a bystander to all of the incredible things that Jesus did. but they didn't just outline what Jesus did for the sake of what happened 2,000 years ago. They outlined it so that we could believe Jesus was capable of doing it in our lives right here, right now, today. We thank you for that truth. We thank you for that promise. It's in your name that we pray. Amen. You see, throughout this series, my hope is that you realize that you have not been called to believe in Jesus based on faith alone. That it is so much better than that. That it is so much greater than that. That there is proof, that there is evidence that this man named Jesus was real and that what he did on this earth actually happened, and it makes a difference in your life and in my life. But if you find yourself still struggling with that, what I want you to know is this, is that you are not going to want to miss next weekend. You are not going to want to miss part two of our series called Bystander. That we want to encourage you and even challenge you that as we go through these tough circumstances, that if we find ourselves confined to our home, that you continue to make this a value and a priority in your life and in your family as you move forward. And what we promise you is this, is that as you find yourself taking steps forward and believing in this man named Jesus, there is a result. Again, we want to thank you guys so much for being here with us in this new avenue, this new adventure. And we hope that you have an incredible week, that you keep your eyes focused on the things that matter most, and we hope that we get to see you soon. Have a great rest of your day.